This is Pat Meltzer with Bernice Alpern. Today, March 30th, 1987, we're interviewing Mrs. Ida Notoff for the second time. We are interviewing her for the Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History Project, Phase 2. Ida, we were talking a little while earlier, and there were a few things that we missed on the first tape. And I wonder if you could give us a little further explanation of these things. For instance, when the last time you were discussing the problems that you had in Lithuania, Russia, etc., and being exiled, etc., you had mentioned they several times, and we were wondering who were you referring to? Who were they? Who were these people who caught up with Nicholas and Alexandra, etc.? We didn't find that to be too clear.
Well, at the end of the First World War is when it happened. And when they got a hold of Nicholas and Alexandra and the family, and after they were slaughtered, they were killed, then they let us go free. Well, like, let my people go, you know.
Maybe revolutionaries, the
Bolshevik revolutionaries, right. Mm-hmm. And were the Bolshevik revolutionaries the people who sent your family into exile? Or
the the Tsar is the one that sent us to exile.
All right. Mm-hmm. And were you sent to exile, do you think, because of your religious beliefs, or because there was a fear that your family was involved in Bolshevism?
My family was not involved in Bolshevism. It's because of my nationality. I was Jewish, and they didn't want any Jews around.
Well, thank you. That clears that up. Another item we were wondering about was what your father's first name was.
Morris, M-O-R-R-I-S.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your father's later years? That's after your mother died.
Oh, mother died in 1937. He took it very hard. And at the cemetery, he got hurt. And he complained, he kept on complaining about his leg, and finally we found out that he had osteomyelitis. And we had him at the Baltimore clinic, and then he came back here, and the amputation was done at the Montefiore Hospital.
Mm-hmm. Then, did he reside with you, or in a nursing home, or?
He was with me.
With you primarily. And then, mm-hmm. Could you tell us when he passed away? Approximately?
1939.
Oh, all right. So that actually your mother predeceased your father by only about 2 years.
That's right.
All right, mm-hmm. Fine. Thank you very much. Could you tell us what your mother's maiden name was? Your mother's maiden name.
Her name was Zishle. That was in Jewish, Z-I-S-H-L-E. Yablin, Y-A-B-L-I-N.
That brings up something else. When you were talking about your experiences in Europe, apparently you lived with your grandparents for a time. Were they your maternal grandparents?
Yes, mm-hmm. My mother's side.
So their name was Yablin then? And
yes.
Were they killed in a pogrom?
No, they weren't killed in a pogrom. We had them with us in Russia. And then we, when, again, after the war was over, they sent us back to Lithuania. We came, all of us came back together. We made it to Lithuania. But then my father sent for us, and we left my grandparents in Lithuania. My grandfather died in Lithuania, and we brought my grandmother over to America. And she stayed with her son. She had two sons and a daughter in Watertown, New York. that's where my grandmother died.
Mm-hmm. What about your paternal grandparents? I understand your father was born in Poland. Did you know them at all?
No, they lived in London. My father's brother was in London, and the parents were in London too. They died in London.
Mm-hmm. Right. We had a question about something else as well. You mentioned the term, I believe it was Zvekunulemil.
Zvekunulemils.
Yeah, could you tell us how you spell that?
Kunulemils. Well, I would say Zve, like two, you know, two Kunulemils. Mm-hmm. And Kunulemils actually means, they weren't smart. Not so smart is what it really amounts to. They didn't always do what they were supposed to be done by the average intelligent individual. Mm-hmm. In other words, they lacked intelligence.
All right, and how do you spell that?
Kuni is K-U-N-I. Lemel is L-E-M-E-L-S. Lemels is a plural. One is a kunilemel, but if it's more than one, it's kunilemels.
Right. And also, you had some more questions about your education. For instance, you mentioned in Europe you were too young to go to the gymnasium.
Gymnasia is high school.
And instead you went to, I believe, Retusia.
Retusia means that public school. Well, I was only like seven, so it was like past kindergarten or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And I went to a school where we had Russian instruction, but we also had Hebrew instructions too.
Okay.
At that time we were allowed. There were no problems as far as teaching Hebrew or knowing Hebrew. I still remember the name of my teacher. He was a male teacher, real nice.
Mm-hmm. What, did the same teacher teach Russian and other subjects as taught Hebrew, or did you have rabbis?
No, we had other teachers too. We had other teachers, but he was the one that taught us Hebrew.
Was this man a rabbi?
No, he was just a learned, very well learned in Hebrew, just like Hebrew teachers here.
Mm-hmm. All right, so that was right in the public school. You had also mentioned going to McKelvey School here and then Conley Business School, where
mm-hmm.
you took business subjects. What did they consider business subjects at that particular
Conley,
time?
Even now, they deal with business subjects, professions, you know, trades, etc. And it was an accredited two-year course.
Mm-hmm.
I took a two-year course because I wanted to get out and work and help out,
mm-hmm.
Help out at home, you know.
Sure. What type of subjects did they teach? Because now if you go to Conley, you'll take some computer science.
There were no computers.
Mm-hmm.
No computers, but we had all the other subjects and very good instruction. Shorthand, typing, bookkeeping and arithmetic, as I said, spelling, everything.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
It was very good.
Well, when you went on to go to Shenley Knight School, what were you taking there?
Well, school, the Conley Business School, was just business, and I wanted to go further as far as an education. See? So after I got through with Shenley, I could have gone to Pitt right away. I mean, I was eligible as far as that. Academic courses is what I took in at Shelby High School.
Could you give us some examples of those courses? Just a few.
I had French, I had music, I had continuing with English, grammar.
Good. Thank you very
and
much.
And whatever else the
mm-hmm.
curriculum called for.
Then on your resume, I noticed that you are a certified myotherapist, reflexologist, and course, that happened just about 5 years ago. And a certified home health care nurse, certified about 5 years ago. Can you tell us what you needed to do in order to become certified in these fields?
Well, a certified, I took a course, and when you're certified, you're allowed to give medication, etc. And I was a home health care nurse, so I took care of patients at their home.
Mm-hmm.
One patient I had for 3.5 years.
Right. So then the state more or less decides what has to be included in your coursework, etc.
It's that was done by the Red Cross.
Oh, it was done
by
the Red Cross.
By the Red Cross. Mm-hmm.
That's,
okay.
That's the home health nurse.
That's the home health.
Mm-hmm. And the other course.
The other massaging, I came to. I was always interested in doing this kind of work because I knew that I never wanted really to believe it, but there's something prompted me to feel that I have something within me that helped other people, and for that reason I practiced it and I used it for my patients that I took care of in their homes. And then I took a course, a certified, it isn't a state certified, but again, it's a clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And mainly through the course, I have found out through my superiors, I have showed you the verification.
Right. We have the letter from Janet Ziegler.
Mm-hmm. She's a doctor. You can see her degrees, all her degrees.
Yes, it says registered nurse, and
mm-hmm.
I don't know what else on there, several things.
And she really, from the minute she looked at me, it's strange how these people, these professionals can tell. From the minute she looked at me, she says that just what she had said in the letter, you know, that I have healing hands, that I bring relief and peace and whatever else to the individual that I I associate with, that I work with.
Right.
Is Ms. Ziegler affiliated with one of the local hospitals?
We have a letter from her.
Mm-hmm.
She's, could you tell us?
She practices on her own, but she is at the Mellon Pavilion. She's in with doctors, with other doctors. And she has her own practice, and she does biofeedback, and she does therapeutic touch.
Okay. Then the next thing that I wanted to ask you about was the University of Pittsburgh. But before I get to that, I noticed that violin lessons are mentioned several places. Can you tell us when you started to take them? And I believe that you're still taking them. This particular time? No.
No, I'm not taking them now. When I came to this country, my parents wanted me to play an instrument. You know, you want to educate the children. And so I started to take lessons. I took lessons from Mr. Hershenson. His sons are doctors, one died and one is still alive. The Hershenson family.
Mm-hmm.
Seal Hershenson is a piano teacher. I took lessons from him, and then I enrolled in the orchestra at Conley and also at Shelley Night School.
Mm-hmm. Very good, thank you. Also, I know you're still a student at this particular time and that you've been auditing courses at the University of Pittsburgh. I understand as of maybe even a year ago that you had approximately 60 credits. I realize you aren't going for a degree at this point. And right now you're taking some stress management courses and you plan to take other courses next term. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that and your experiences at the University of Pittsburgh?
Well, again, like I had mentioned in my in the letter or in the biography that Marcia Rose wrote about me. The University of Pittsburgh has given me, I think, hope, fulfillment, and the desire to more and more learn, not to stop. And this is the way I feel, and to this day, even though I'm only an audit student, which means I'm not working for credits, I learn. I enter to learn, and then I go out to serve. Whatever I learn is very useful, because the subjects I take really are the ones that interest me. I wouldn't take a subject just to attend school, but I take, I'm involved in physiology, psychology, the health field. I would say political courses too, at times, which I feel broadens my way of life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anything that I deem necessary to get by on nowadays, because you really can't just stay still and not know what is going on, you know.
Well, thank you very much. That was quite interesting. I'd like to ask you some questions about your volunteer work and the awards, etc., that you have won. And you have a quite extensive list of organizations for which you volunteer, and also some awards. I wonder if you could tell us something about your affiliation with Presbyterian Hospital, the Friendly Visitor Services Recruiting Committee, Translator Corrections, the Organ Transplant Committee, that sort of thing.
I did give you some documents that I got from Presby. I was written up in their periodical. My work entails being with the patient as I'm really a friendly visitor. I don't deliver flowers or water or whatever. I feel that can be done, you know, for that they can pay. But I want to give something that I can heal. And I find that my work does help. And what I do is I work directly with the patient. And it seems that I'm acknowledged with much respect, honor, and appreciation by the both by the doctors, the nurses, the volunteer office, and mainly it's the patients that I really appreciate when they make your day.
Yes, I'm sure.
It's very fulfilling. It really is. I've had patients that have told me that either, what did you do to me? I was sick, and I'm not sick anymore, just like that. Now, that sounds very strange, but this is what what happens, and I've had a lot of experiences like that, and it just makes me go back again and want to.
Can you elaborate on what you mean by working directly with the patient?
Yes, I work on my own. In other words, the volunteer director lets me do my own thing, and when I come in, I sign in, and then I go from room to room, wherever there are, if there are visitors there, if there's family members or whatever, I don't disturb them. But if I see the patient is alone, I'll go in and I'll introduce myself. And before you know it, we're friends. And I can sit there anywhere from, even last week, I spent 45 minutes with a patient. But when you spend 45 minutes, time is very precious, but when you know you're lifting somebody up, time is of no essence anymore, because you figure you're performing something that is so valuable. When you see how the patient behaves before, when you first come in, and then when you leave them, and then the encouragement that they give you and the praise, etc., etc., just it just fulfills you, that's all. And this is all I do. I just talk. It's like psychotherapy is what I would say.
Right. You mentioned that you were on the recruiting committee there.
Yes.
Recruitment of nurses or other volunteers?
Recruiting volunteers, and it's recruiting the there's always a need for volunteers. And I am on the committee, and we try to recruit as many as we can, and we have meetings. We haven't had a meeting now for a couple of months, but this is what the job is.
Well, how about the translating for the Russian Jewish immigrants? Is that a formal department, or do they call you whenever they have someone who needs some help, or does a patient call you, or how does that happen?
Well, I'm registered there. I used to translate for the United Jewish Federation. I did give you some documents on that, and that was when they were allowed to come in. Now they're very limited. I used to take it to the doctors, Social Security. I had affairs for them here in my home. We really had we had a great time, and it was a great service that was performed. And through them, I'm registered at the Presby and also at the Western Psych, and I'm on call. The last call I had was about 6 weeks ago. I was with the father of a patient at the Western Psych.
Right. Could you tell us a little bit about your work on the organ transplant committee? I believe it's called Second Chance. Perhaps it's an organization.
Second Chance. That was KDKA and Presby. Yeah, I was on a committee that we made telephone calls, and we took calls when they had that when they had that campaign for organs. I assisted there at the office at the administrative building. That's the Isley building.
All right. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Could you tell us a little more about your work at the hospice? I know you're a friendly visitor there, and also on the bereavement committee and the pastoral committee.
Right.
Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes.
Okay. Excuse me. Go ahead, Mrs. Notoff.
Okay. At the hospice, I'm with the dying, actually with the dying patients when they go in there. It's a sure thing. I mean, everybody dies, but this is a sure thing. It's just a matter of sometimes it's days, sometimes it's weeks, and maybe they'll live for a few months. But I'm directly, again, if you can communicate with them like this very morning. I worked there this morning. This morning we had no communication because those people that are there, those patients, they're more dead than alive. But we still give them compassion and nourishment. We try, even though they can't answer, they open their eyes. And when they open their eyes, you can see that they want to say something. They don't say it. But we feed them. Very few eat, but we try to give them nourishment.
Mm-hmm.
And it also is fulfilling to be with the members of the family. The acceptance by a lot of them are, some are in the negative and some of the affirmative, but it seems like there too I have the privilege to reach them. And I know one member of the family, after I had talked to her, she called on the telephone, she called me on the phone, and she wanted me to repeat to her what I had said to her, because she said that strengthened her and it opened another era for her.
Okay. All right. This is the end of tape two, side one.